you can do as much about the legacy of the Holocaust and what I took from my depressed mother who lost all her family in the Holocaust. There is so much I could do in personal analysis. And there was another bit that I could do only in a strange kind of dialogue in the presence of Germans doing their own work. So it's do your own internal work in the presence of another who is doing his internal work.
Welcome to the Psychoanalysis On and Off the Couch podcast. For the past few years, we've been speaking with analysts from around the world who've been applying their analytic way of thinking, not only to their offices, but also off the couch, in venues external to their consulting rooms. We've spoken to analysts who work in hospitals, in prisons, in community health centers, in refugee clinics, just to name a few. We've also detoured, of course, during COVID. We've spoken with analysts again from around the world to learn from our communities how they, their patients, and the analytic community in general have been dealing with this crisis. And hopefully, the worst is over, and we can return to our main focus. We can return to speaking to analysts who are bringing their skills to people who otherwise would never see the inside of an analyst's office. In addition to that, we're speaking with the elders of our field, people who have been practicing this craft for 40 and 50, sometimes longer years, to learn from them what they have to teach us, not only about this piece of history that we're all living through, but their reflections on our field. Please visit us at our website, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can leave a comment, where you can subscribe. I hope you find these conversations thoughtful and meaningful. And I appreciate your listening. Thank you. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Harvey Schwartz, and my guest today is Mira Ehrlich-Ginor. Mira is a training and supervising analyst and on the faculty of the Israeli Psychoanalytic Society. And our conversation today is on two aspects of her off-the-couch psychoanalytic work. The first concerns her being a founding member 30 years ago of an organization entitled Partners in Confronting Collective Atrocities. And as the name implies, and as it's described, it's an organization, and I'm reading from their mission statement, that works towards developing strategies to engage with the legacy of past and present atrocities. In terms of the past atrocities, this organization brought together Israeli and German psychoanalysts to encounter each other. And Mira gives us a very full, rich, and emotionally meaningful description of what those encounters have meant to her and to others. And she takes that same mindset and applies it to her work as a consultant to the many struggling psychoanalyst candidates and mental health community surrounding the Ukrainian Psychoanalytic Society and her work with them. And we discuss these two areas, and what comes across to me is Mira's heart and soul that brings her to this work. And she shares a good deal about her background that informs and inspires her to be as devoted as she is. In terms of her credentials and her activities, she's deeply involved in psychoanalytic education and group relations work. She's been the European representative for the IPA board for two terms. She currently chairs the steering committee of the IPA in the community and the world, the place that she and I work together. Her past roles has been she's a co-director of a psychotherapy tract of an education committee, chair of the EPF, European Psychoanalytic Federation Working Parties on Education. She's a sponsoring committee of an organization in Turkey. She's led several international research projects on psychoanalytic education. You get the picture. She is deeply immersed in the world of psychoanalysis. And as that mostly focuses on her work on the couch, we get a taste of the thoughtfulness, the skills, and the heart that she brings to off-the-couch work. I found my conversation with her very meaningful, and I learned a great deal, and I hope you feel that way as well. Mira, welcome to the podcast. I'm so glad to have you here. Mira, we come together today in a bit of a circuitous route. I had a conversation not long ago with Igor Romanov, a Ukrainian psychoanalyst, who was describing for me the circumstances of he, his institute, and his community. And I had asked him, is he getting consultation from analysts outside the country? And he said he was. He said Israeli analysts were being very helpful to him and his community. And I asked who, and he mentioned by name you and Shmuel, your husband. And it was on that basis that I then contacted you to have a conversation about your side of what these consultations were like. Now, you and I know each other. We work together as part of the IPA in the community and world structure. You head the steering committee. I'm one of the members on the from the health committee on your committee. So we have encountered each other. But in our beginning to discuss this project, I learned of yet another hat that you wear, and you've worn it for some time, that you are one of the originators of, going back 30 years, of an organization called Partners in Confronting Collective Atrocities, PCCA. And as I've gotten to know this organization through my interest in you and your work, number one, I learned that they won the Sigourney Award in 2019. And that there's a connection in your experience between your founding that organization with others, your work in that organization, and a direct line to your work today with the Ukrainian colleagues. So I thought we could cover a big part of your professional life by starting with PCCA, talking about that work and where it comes from within you, and that would lead us to the work you're doing now in Ukraine. And I'd like to begin by reading the mission statement from PCCA, and it reads as follows. Partners in Confronting Collective Atrocities is an organization that works towards developing strategies to engage with the legacy of past and present atrocities so as to open up possibilities for a more hopeful future. It grew out of the recognition of a group of German and Israeli psychoanalytic colleagues that their ability to relate to and to work with the other was seriously constrained by the legacy of the Holocaust. Unconscious hatred on the part of victims and their descendants, and guilt on the part of the descendants of perpetrators, seemed to live on as insurmountable obstacles. Mira, tell us about the organization and what led you to be one of the founders of it.
Thank you, Harvey. I'm glad that we met on the two sides of the microphone, and we'll have, and that you give me the opportunity to present more of this important work that, as you say, is not very much known. And you mentioned this before, and I thought that this is part of our, I think, problem. It's part of our ethics, and it's part of our professional deformation that we do very important things. We as a community of psychoanalysts, we do a lot of important things, but we don't know how to broadcast them so that the work, the thinking, the theory, the practice beyond it is not well enough known. And it's not that we have not written about PCCA, about what is called the Nazareth Conferences, but the fact is that it's not well known. It's better known in Germany. It's known in Israel, in the psychoanalytic communities. And it is a bit known in the world. And with the Sigourney Award, it is more known than it was before. You said that you want to connect PCCA with the work with the Ukrainian colleagues, which do have a connection. But I want to confuse you even more and to say that my appointment as chair of the steering committee, IPA in the community and the world, has also to do with PCCA. And maybe I'll start with this.
Okay.
One of the fallouts, excuse my English if my wording is not exact, but something that we developed as a result of the PCCA work are a format of large groups, which we are doing. We are Shmuel Early, my partner, myself, and other colleagues in the IPA congresses and in the EPF congresses for at least, I think, the last 10 years. It started with a large group in Berlin when there was an IPA Congress. If I'm not mistaken, it was 2007. And it was a huge event and extremely interesting. And as I know that you are offering also a bibliography in the bottom of the interview, mm-hmm. It will be part of the bibliography, a paper describing the large group in the Berlin conference. Anyhow, Harriet Wolff participated in, it was before COVID, in a large group that we held in an EPF congress in Warsaw. And she said that she's writing it, and she's saying it repeatedly, that her participation in this large group made her decide to run for the presidency of the IPA. And out of this experience, she asked me, several years later, to chair the steering committee. So it is all...
mm-hmm. It's all of a piece.
Yeah, right. Yeah. These are all facets of the same, mm-hmm. same concern and same involvement.
I would say passion.
And passion. Yes. I will not argue with you. Right. So... the story of PCCA has many roots, but to save a bit of time, I will start with Shmuel and I participated in the early 90s in several ski seminars that were held by a group of German analysts. During the day, we would all go to ski, and in the afternoon, there were case presentations. And in these case presentations, we were aware or maybe even shocked by the fact that the 12 that you know, you bring the anamnesis of the patient, something about their family, their parents, their context. There was never a mention of what the parents or the grandparents did during the war. And first it seemed like a specific case presentation, but later we understood that this is what it is, that these 12 years are not touched and are not worked through, and that a whole generation of German analysts, candidates, and the way they transmit the profession is lacking this possibility of working on their problematic heritage. Another aspect of this seminars were that people, German colleagues, would want to talk to us around the dinner table, coffee time, and so on. And they would tell us, without us asking them, they would tell us their personal stories. And it was very emotionally involving and also overwhelming that when we came out of this seminars, we thought we have to do something with it. We recognized a deep need, and we thought that we may have a possible platform or format that is suitable to do a work that seems to be needed. We also realized that through their stories and their need of us to be the listener and the witnesses to their stories, something happens to us as well. And we are thrown back to our personal histories. We are revisiting the history, and we realized the value and the importance of being used in the Winnicottian sense by the Germans, and that we are using them. And we thought that this is a kind of a startup for interesting work that is going on now for the last 30 years.
Let me see if I have this clear in my mind, that you observed that as they presented patients, they omitted reference to the war years, and that somehow they're presenting it to you, the Israeli contingent, helped them become aware of their need to not be aware of the presence and meaning of the war years. And in so doing, you aided their de-repression, if you want to call it something. And you were also benefited yourself by your immersion in their repression in coming to terms with your own past.
That's a very nice way to put it.
Well, is it nice as in accurate, or is it nice? give me the less nice version. What do you mean by that?
It's interesting. The way you put it is interesting. It's not entirely accurate.
Okay, well, let's do the accurate.
You were we were guests, and we had our observations, and we were too tentative and too respectful to give them interpretations about what they are doing or not doing. So we observed it, and it took some time. It took 1 year, another year, to have this phenomenon clear enough for us to understand that this is a general phenomenon.
I see.
Apart from this, or parallel to observing this lacuna, there was the interpersonal contact in which they wished us, they wanted us to listen to them. And then what you described, the way that it put us in contact with our history, with our stories, and something really meaningful and deep happened on a person-to-person level, which we took and we thought it should be done on a more collective level. Like not Mira talking with, let's say, Dorothy, but Israelis talking to Germans in a configuration of group work. So it's not on the couch, it's off the couch, but it is informed by psychoanalytic understanding.
It's a Tavistock model, yes?
It's an adaptation of the Tavistock model, of the, let's say, generic Tavistock model, to work with two group of people initially defined as the second or third generations of perpetrators and victims.
And this has been going on for years now, yeah?
Yes, we had, I think, 18 conferences. It's every 2 years, sometimes every 3 years. It's not every year even. Many people are coming one time after the other to do pieces of work for themselves, and there are always new members. And having the first, I think, four conferences were defined as German and Israeli / Jews, the past in the present. Further conferences opened up to affected others, not only Israelis, Jews, German, also including Palestinians. And then in the last few years, it moved to Europe. It was more focused on Europe, victims and perpetrators, and the phenomenon of migration, and open door, closed doors, sliding doors.
And a premise is this phrase, do your own work in the presence of the other. It's a profound notion. Tell us about it.
That's right. You know, there is so much, and I'm for decades an analyst, and this is my main identity and the main most of my working hours are devoted to personal analysis, but I also know the limits of personal analysis. And there are areas that cannot be touched. Maybe they are not relevant to personal analysis and can be touched in a very deep way. In this kind of psychoanalytically informed group processes. So you can do as much about the legacy of the Holocaust and what your mother, what I took from my depressed mother, who lost all her family in the Holocaust. There is so much I could do in personal analysis. And there was another bit that I could do only in a dialogue, in a strange kind of dialogue, in the presence of Germans doing their own work. So it's do your own internal work in the presence of another who is doing his internal work. So, you know, we have this book that we'll also put in the bibliography.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which is called Fed with Tears, Poisoned with Milk, and the Nazareth Conferences.
Tell us the story of that title.
And the story of the title was, you know, I'm not an English-speaking person, as is obvious. And at one instance when there was a plenary of maybe 70 people in the room, we were in Germany in a conference, first time that the Nazareth Conference, which started in Nazareth, took place in a German village, Bad Segeberg. And I don't remember exactly what happened before, but I found myself saying very emotionally, very movingly, that I was milked with tears. Meaning that my mother, when I was a baby, at her breast, she got the information of her family being killed in the concentration camps, and she became depressed, and so the milk I had was filled with tears. And immediately a German colleague, psychoanalyst, responded to my saying, and she said, and I was milked with poison. Strange as it seems, as the vocabulary is very strange, but everybody seemed to understand also the double meaning of being milked. That by being at my mother's breast, she also, I was a source of her comfort and of her hope. So it was a two-way feed. Now, there is an interesting passage in this book in which the German colleagues explains what it is, what she meant by fed with poison. And she had this terrible realization that coming to this conference and meeting for the first time Israelis, she was extremely afraid and anxious, and she thought that all the Israelis, all the Jews are the same, are alike, and that this realization that this was her state of mind was really a moment of revelation for her. Because she understood that this is the Nazi mind, that thinking that all are the same, faceless, nameless. This is the Nazi mind. People are numbers, and you can kill them because they are nobody. Now, you can maybe get the feeling that this kind of internal work that she did with herself in her room during the night, following the spontaneous interchange, I was milked with tears, I was milked with poison. This is an example what it means to do the work in the presence of the other. I don't think that otherwise she could come up with this realization that part of her is so identified with something that she internalized from her parents, that this is the way it comes up. And of course, she is a fantastic person. And she is a peace worker, and she did, and she does an incredible things, political, social, and so on. But still, there was a part of her that she could identify as coming from the from her Nazi inheritance. And something very similar happened to one Israeli colleague who writes beautifully about a moment in which he wants to kill in the conference. He wants to kill all the Germans. He wants them to disappear because they hurt him in such a way, in a certain way. It's all in the book, and it's very readable, so I recommend it. But so working in this way is very meaningful. Now, it was possible more than 50 years after the war to do the work in the presence of the other. Is not possible when the other is an enemy who is killing you now, in real time. It is working on the residue of the trauma, not during the trauma. And if you connect it to our Ukrainian colleagues, they are within the trauma. They are now in the war. And for them, it's unhuman to have the distance. It's not possible. It's not expected. It's not, I don't know that it is desirable even, because they are in a state of mind of survival. And they are in situation which confront them with real life dilemmas, which I said, it's not human, but only human can have this kind of dilemmas. But you have to be superhuman to survive this kind of dilemmas between taking care of your father and staying with him, or running for your life and for your child's life. How can you solve such a dilemma? Or giving birth in a foreign country, or returning to the fire zone because your husband is there. Really, you know, and these are only small bits and pieces of huge dilemmas that our colleagues have on a daily or hourly basis.
And so your involvement, you're taking this, your knowledge, more importantly, your spirit, from your personal history and your history of working in this organization with German and Israeli colleagues, and you bring it to your work with Ukraine. Tell us about what you've been doing.
Well, the Alexandra Mirza, she wrote to Shmuel Ehrlich and asked if he can suggest something, if he can do some work with them, with the Ukrainian colleagues who need work. It was, I think, in March, quite soon after the beginning of the war. And Shmuel brought it to the PCCA because he thought that PCCA is a relevant organizational format. And he asked Dorothy von Tippelkirch Eising, who is a German colleague, who is a chair of the PCCA, and myself to join him. We designed a working schedule in which there is first a plenary, then small groups, then again a plenary.
And who's in attendance at these meetings?
We ended with having two groups, two separate groups. Colleagues, psychoanalyst and psychotherapist, Ukrainian. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I told you, I keep telling myself, I have to remind myself how miraculous this thing is. Mm-hmm. They are in the middle of the war. And because of the technology, and because of the present that COVID gave us, in that we are all now familiar working on Zoom, it is at all possible to think to have this kind of meeting in the middle of the war. One is in Kiev, one is in a shelter I forgot the name. One is in Lviv, one in Dnipro, in the shelter, because it was bombs. It was bombing at the time, and we could hear sirens. One here is near Lviv, one is in Turkey, the other one in Hungary, another one in Amsterdam, in Germany, in several places. And all these people, for 2 hours, three times every week, met, touch base with each other. And what did we do with them? We provided them a container to be together with one another and with themselves. For some of them, it was the first time they could cry. They had the you know, tears were locked in and couldn't come out, and it was the containment in the group and the presence, I think, of everybody and of the group leaders that enabled the tears to come out, but also to laugh and to joke and to feel alive, and to bring in the dilemmas. There is a huge shame and guilt on top of the fear, an unknown future. Unknown future, they don't know. Not what will be next week, maybe they say no by now, but what will be next year? How long will it take? Will they remain at the places where they found shelter? Will it be good enough? Can they create a life? They are not work refugees who are looking for a new place. They want to go back home if their home exists and if there are a situation in which they can go back. So whatever they are doing is temporary. And they are struggling that life will not be on hold. Because You know, it's like first of all, you are paralyzed and you stop breathing. But then after some times, you have to breathe again. Mm. You have to negotiate life and to negotiate, you know, their personal identity, their professional identity, to be of help and available to their patients. It's really, it is so heartbreaking, the situation. It really is heartbreaking. And to think that this happens 2022, with all the world watching, and that we can do whatever we can do, but we cannot undo what has been done. The world could not prevent the war from breaking. There is something unbelievable.
It is.
And so disappointing.
Are they able to be in touch with their patients?
Yes. Sometimes with some patients, yes. They try because it's important for them and it's important for their patients. But there are minimal requirements both for them and for the patients in order to be able to be in touch and to be available to do the work.
One of the things I understand you've learned from your work with PCCA is being very sensitive for former enemies to be in contact with each other and to process the experience of being together. I bring this up because some have raised the possibility of Russian and Ukrainian colleagues being in touch together, even now. And you have some important perspectives on that.
I think that, you know, theoretically, of course, it will be fantastic when Ukrainian can be in touch with Russian colleagues. We are talking about colleagues. We are not talking about Russian soldiers who have done, committed atrocities. But at this moment, I think we have to respect the psychological armor and the need to protect oneself, one's identity, while maintaining those who are identified with the aggressor at a distance. We have to respect this. I am certain that eventually, in time, it will change. But I think that out of respect and of understanding of defense mechanism, of healthy defense mechanism, we as a community should not exert pressure on a premature getting together. We should not. I feel very kind of mobilized to be protective, like I'm putting my arms around them and I say, don't push, don't push. Remember, it took Israelis 50 years and our colleagues, our psychoanalytic colleagues, some of them said, I am not ready to speak with Germans 50 years later. And they didn't think that the colleagues, you know, were part of, active part of the war, but couldn't allow to have a space within themselves to let the descendants of the perpetrators in. And, you know, in the first conference, German came with so many fantasies on how the Jews are going to kill them. They will come to Nazareth. They will come to the hotel. They will come to a secure place to do some psychoanalytic group work, and they are going to be killed, literally killed. And they had this terrible fantasies. And we are speaking 50 years later. So I really think that, you know, theoretically it will be good to unsplit the split and to recognize the person as it is and not as a representative of the Russian government or the Russian regime. But this needs internal time, and internal time is not, you cannot count internal, look at internal time on the watch.
Right. And actually, that segues so clearly. You go from the current Ukrainian situation to the Holocaust seamlessly within a sentence, speaking about internal unconscious time. They are of one in your inner life, and you bring yourself from one to the other, and you add your work in the steering committee of not only focusing on analysis off the couch, but analysis throughout the community, where we can bring the skills and the listening to offer to people who don't get into psychoanalyst's office.
Right. And if you want to have it even more complicated, my family comes from what is now Ukraine. And what was, when they lived there, was Poland, around Lviv and a little bit eastern of Lviv. So when I hear the name, it's not a foreign country to me. These are names that resonate very deeply in my conscious and unconscious personal memory and collective memory. And I bring this passion and this connectedness to the work. And you mentioned, I want to not lose this point, that Igor said that Israelis are working with them. As I said, Dorothy von Tippelskirch, I think, is not Israeli, but she became part of the Israelis. And they keep mentioning that we are Israelis, and it is very meaningful to them. And when we probed a little bit into it, we understood that for them, maybe for you too, I don't know, the image is that Israelis are living in war, in a war zone, and in a continuous war for years, and that we are surviving, and that we are not the weak party of this war. And I don't, as an Israeli, I don't experience myself in a continuous war. Not at all. I'm very, you know, I'm very proud being Israeli. I identify with the country, with the people, not so much with the government. But still, I'm Israeli. This week, in the 3 days, we are the Independence. We have the Independence Day, which is a very, you know, special day.
Yes.
Sorrow and joy coming together. Last week we had the Holocaust Memorial Day. And this is part of being Israeli and also connected very, very much to the history.
Mira, I generally, when we close a conversation, I find threads in the conversation to bring together to sort of summarize either the content or my experience of the encounter. And I'm not inclined to do that in our conversation today. You don't need a summary statement. You're going back to the word before, your passion it's more than conviction. It's more than just skills. It's your passion. It's your soul. Comes across so clearly and so in such a broad way as the head of the steering committee, nowadays having psychoanalysis reach out in the work with Israelis and Germans, with Ukrainians, with your pride at being Israeli, with your commitment to give to people and to be healing to people. It's, I guess this is my summary statement, but it is of just really noticing what you've brought forward and shared with us. I feel moved. I can only imagine our listeners feel it as well. And it's the sort of thing that leads me to want to say, we should talk more. And let's make a point of that down the road to do this again. Thank you. Thank you, Mira, for sharing not just your work, but your heart.
Thank you, Harvey. What a beautiful bringing together. I hope it is as you say. I couldn't wish for more.
Thank you. Be well. Thank you for listening. If I may, I'd like to ask you to help us publicize our podcast by rating us on iTunes or simply sharing it with a friend. You can also visit our webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can both subscribe and also add your comments. I'd also like to acknowledge the lovely rendition of Beethoven's Opus 18th String Quartet by the Allegri String Quartet on the Vivat label.